You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 112. This episode, Nobody Told Tony. Everybody, and welcome to this, I don't even know which episode this is, of Green Lantern Corecast. I just went straight to podcast out of Power Ranger mode. I'm not Frankie Mateo, but I'm Kuhan. You may know me on the internet as Kuhan. And joining me on the panel of round guests, so Colton Clayton, or a.k.a. Musard. Colton?
The new headset is in again, and it's all good.
Okay, Brandon West... Yeah, a.k.a. West, is also here. Brandon?
Is here, yes.
And Eric Cahill.
That's the one.
Yeah. So I guess let's get right on into the Frankie is not here because we assume he's out drinking and getting girls, I don't know, hitting it up with women in a sexual context. News, Brandon.
Good news and bad news. What do you guys want to hear first?
I'd rather hear the bad news first.
You'd rather hear the bad news.
Is there like middle news?
There is middle news, but I don't want to talk about middle news.
All right, bad news. Let's do the bad news.
Bad news is, and it's only bad news for you guys because you guys are so evil and hate Dreadfield. This previous weekend, Tony Bedard attended the MegaCon convention down in Orlando, Florida, and mentioned that Green Lantern New Guardians and Green Lantern Corps would have a crossover. So
That's not bad news.
Issue 12 and 13.
It makes
it's not like a surprise. I thought that was something they were leaning towards.
Yes. Okay, well, the good news is I just got a message from Frankie. He says, well, that sucks because I'm out drinking and nowhere near my computer. So, Frank will not be joining us tonight.
That's the good news?
We know he's alive.
Okay.
Did
he say anything about getting laid?
We'll see. We'll check back in with Frank at the end of the episode and see if he's getting laid. How's that?
Do we have any other news?
Just the middle news.
All right, middle news then.
Middle news. Justice League Doom, we mentioned it last episode, is coming out soon, and that we'll be recording a commentary on that movie, the animated movie from Warner Brothers Animation, as soon as possible.
From Warner Brothers Animation as opposed to...
DC Entertainment?
Whatever.
I don't know. Whatever. You know. All right. Let's not make this a hard time. Let's just... move on. I'm done. I'm going drinking.
There's a new trailer, right, for the Green Lantern animated series.
Can you really call it a trailer? It's a 30-second commercial.
It's a commercial. I didn't actually watch it. I just saw a tweet that you sent. I'm like, oh, hey, that's a thing.
I guess we're doing more. But they are doing another. We already knew the announcement date and stuff.
Yes, yeah, 15th, right? Green Lantern the 3rd. Of March, it will be...
I don't know.
Well, the new episode is on the 15th. We already saw is the 3rd.
Okay, so I was accurate,
kind of. Not the 15th. It's like a Wednesday or Thursday.
I don't know. Sometime in the next...
For people out there, Green Lantern anime series returns March 3rd. The episodes are broken into 30-minute shows, so the first two episodes... So the hour-long special we saw in November... of last year will be the first 2 weeks. So that's March 3rd and March 10th. So if you just want to wait and miss out on a DC Nation special is, and Young Justice returning, and you just want your Green Lantern content, then come back on March 17th, St. Paddy's Day, St. Paddy's Day morning, actually, and you'll be able to enjoy a new Green Lantern animated series episode.
You know what I realized is that the 15th is when Community comes back. That's why I got him confused.
That is also so relevant.
I said the 15th. That's why I said it. Yeah. And so
you might as well try to enjoy Community while it's still on, I guess.
Yeah. Right. For the next three episodes before it. So yeah. Also, minor announcement. I'm going to be going to C2E2 again, just so you know. And I'm going to deal with the 8,000 tweets from Brandon. But I will be live tweeting it probably again. Probably.
Oh, good.
So
we can get more information. Get more information. And what I should have said was get the same thing we got last time, which is no information. That's what I meant to say.
I mean, it's going to be the same thing you get from anyone else. So,
yeah. Yes.
With that aside, I guess we should talk about the issues, unless we have something else. No, I don't think so. So the issues. The first issue, I'll do the one I didn't read first, which is Green Lantern New Guardians number 6. I'm guessing a story arc ended mediocrely.
No, it's still in the middle of the.
Yeah, awesome. It didn't end at all.
Awesome,
actually.
Awesome.
We mentioned this last episode as well, that this book is taking Emerald Warrior's place. It's going incredibly slow, and while it's presenting a lot of interesting ideas, like the mind control villain from Emerald Warriors and the religion aspect of this issue, it's not really intriguing. It's just slow paced. Here's a bunch of stuff, and it's a fight at every issue, and we're not going anywhere with this. And I think, as much as I enjoyed New Guardians number 5, where we got to see a little bit more of Fatality and how she felt about her situation as a Star Sapphire, we get none of that here, and it's not replaced with more information on Glomulus or Saint Walker or Akilo or anybody. It's just, you know, the bad guy shows up and they kind of sort of fight, and that's it. That's absolutely it for this issue, and it's like you had a chance to tell a story in 6 issues, and you absolutely fail. It has absolutely no ending, and you know, you just wonder, like, how do you get away with not telling the story in 6 issues?
Yeah, I mean, and they conclude the more or less the story at the end of issue 4 with a cliffhanger, I guess, but yeah, I mean, and you mentioned this before, the idea of why aren't they writing to the trades and stuff, and it's kind of like, you know, it's been a complaint in the last few years since, I guess, guys like Brian Bendis and got involved, and Geoff Johns to a lesser extent, this idea of writing to the trade, you know, the idea of that 7 issues, nothing happens, and then 8 issues, nothing happens, you know, and then the idea is that, all right, they're collecting into a big book, because when you read it all together, it ends up being a good story, and that's worked for Brian Bendis' benefit, because people like the writer, and when you read these books, they're great, and then it's kind of DC's really taking advantage of it, because that's how they've justified their kind of everything's a big event, you know, because every 6 issues, huge, huge cataclysmic thing happens, and then starts all over again. But the complaint has been, well, why don't we just have issues? You know, why do we have to write for the trades, et cetera, especially with this new relaunch? But I think you're right, because I think no matter what we do, eventually the single issues are going to go away. So DC has to start thinking about trades, especially for this. I mean, the next wave where the new 52 is actually going to be financially successful is going to be in trades. So they really should have been thinking about writing towards the trades, you know. And my whole opinion is that they should not be having any series go past issue 6 anyway. Every series should be a miniseries, regardless. And if it succeeds, do a second miniseries. You know, don't start everything over at number 1 every 6 months is what they should be doing. So I'm with you 100%. And it's kind of like, where's the natural stop going to be here? Because I think they released the information about what's going to be included in the first New Guardians trade, right? I think it's issue 7 or 8. So regardless, we're going to get a cliffhanger. There's no way you're going to resolve this storyline that quickly. But especially considering that this is the second issue of a new storyline and almost nothing happened. So I don't know.
Well, how did you feel about this issue in particular?
Well, I don't know. How can you feel about it? I mean, basically, it's a big fight issue, and it's at this point, I'm kind of tired of the Tony Bedard thing. I mean, you know, we were. It's interesting because now we've all been talking about these Green Lantern comics for so long, and the writers have been on these books long enough that they have. Their writing style is very repetitive. They write the same kind of books over and over and over. I mean, Peter Tomasi writes these books where these hardened dudes show up. a lot of interesting Green Lantern characters who have very almost fascist ideas about how to be Lanterns, and then half them get killed by the end of the storyline, and there's big blood and guts and stuff like that. Tony Bedard introduces a new villain, has them beat the crap out of everybody, then he runs away at the end. You know, it's like seven issues of just one big dude punching everybody. Geoff Johns does the whole run-around jerk-off continuity thing. So this is kind of like par for the course. The character himself is not really – I mean, it's a better design than I was expecting from Tyler Kirkham, because I don't like Tyler Kirkham's art. But it's not really much. It's just a big fight issue, and nothing really progresses in the plot. You know, there's a couple of elements where he's using the Green Lantern mythos and kind of trying to turn them around, being, you know, that this character recognizes the ring. The ring's being used as being traceable to one guy he calls the Beast, which is obviously either Krona or yet another ancient entity that had something to do with
it. Actually, it's pretty clear that it's Larfleeze.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's referring – because he's talking about Glamis issue.
Yeah. No, but he said something about how all the ring power comes from the Beast, and the Beast being a specific entity that, like, he was like, oh, my God. Or you might be right, because there was that big Larfleeze thing. That's completely right. Yeah, right.
That the statue of the Beast was Larfleeze.
Which is, I guess that's right, right? So then forget I said all that. But point in fact, it's kind of like, you know, it's just another dude that hates everybody and wants to fight them and stuff like that. You know, and I think there's supposed to be a thing, you know, where St. Walker tries to challenge the guy with his whole powers, and it doesn't work on him. And it's played for the shock value, but I'm not quite sure what St. Walker's powers really are. I mean, I guess he, like, pulls people's greatest hopes, and that makes them feel better about stuff. But it's not actually cured anybody.
I think it's just supposed to soothe you.
What St. Walker said was he was supposed to something on the lines of fix what's, like, damaged him, or, like, bring what is wrong with him. But there's nothing – he says there's nothing wrong with him, and that he's wondering why he considers St. Walker, like, the one good person on this group of assholes.
I think it's a religious thing, because obviously they're playing at this religious angle. The idea that he's a religious fanatic, so he doesn't have any – he's so convicted that he doesn't actually think there's anything wrong. But what did Walker really think it was going to do? Because he did it to Arkillo, and it made his tongue grow back, but Arkillo is still a dick. You know, I mean, he's done it to – he did to Atrocitus, and Atrocitus had that vision where Blue St. Walker got married, you know, and it didn't happen. They're still not married. I'm waiting for that.
it'll be the next Valentine's issue.
Look, but Atrocitus is still a huge dick.
It's not supposed to change the character fundamentally. It's just supposed to soothe them in that moment. If you recall St. Walker did it to John Stewart, he didn't, you know, become a different person. In fact, he probably became a worse person, because now he's murdered more and more people by the day.
John Stewart, Lantern Killer.
But it's funny, and then what ended up happening, I was played for this big shock thing, and it's really just – it was really totally – and it's, in all fairness, an interesting idea, because St. Walker's obviously are also a religious fanatic, and to have him confront another religious fanatic being like, I use my religious power to secure you really religiously, and then the guy's like, it doesn't work. I'm much more religious than you, you know, and that's kind of cool to play up that angle of it, and that's the only really different thing about this villain versus the other couple of villains. But, I mean, really, it's cultish, and we've seen cultish bad guys running around the last couple of years anyway, but it's funny to think about, like, this guy shows up, he's punching all your friends, he's killing you, he's like, I'm going to annihilate you. And then you're like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you a hug. Or, you know, I'm going to give you, like, a psychic hug, and you're going to feel better about yourself.
Well, if everyone else is punching and shooting him, you got to try something different.
I'm saying if, like, you know, if somebody was shooting all my friends, I wouldn't give him more bullets, is all I'm saying.
Here you go. Here's a pack of 22s.
Well, Colton, you never get tired of Tony Bedard's writing, as Eric has. What did you think about this?
I was much less negative about the issue. I mean, one thing I wanted to touch upon that
really much less negative. What a shock!
I didn't even get a chance to say anything positive, and I might have, but now I won't.
you said you kind of like the design.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than I thought. No, I didn't kind of like the design. It's better than I thought it was going to be.
That's positive ish as much as you can expect.
That's like giving somebody more bullets to shoot your friends. That's how positive it is.
Okay. Well, one thing I wanted to point out that I'm surprised no one mentioned was the fact that this further shows Kyle's sort of connection to the emotions. Like, we saw him get the rings and use them somewhat effectively for a few moments before it overloaded. And here he finds out that the rings can't technically communicate with each other over long distances because they're normally incompatible. So basically he uses his ring as kind of a focal point and tries to bring out all the emotions he can. He's actually able to communicate with everyone through different emotional wavelengths. I thought was an interesting touch.
I thought it would be an interesting touch if I hadn't, like, 2 minutes later remember that Guy Gardner did the exact same thing during Blackest Night with ease. You know, he broadcast it to every damn lantern in the universe. So it's like, oh, well, At some point, you have to remember that Tony doesn't.
But yeah, you're right. At some point, you got to remember that Tony doesn't read Green Lantern comics.
Or at least no editor bothers to tell him anything.
Well, granted, they do have a new editorial staff on this.
Well, that would explain it.
Or everyone told Tony Bedard that nobody knew who Sorin Ignatius' father was. Like when we asked him, how come you just didn't tell anybody? He's like, I literally did not know. No one told him anything.
That's John's plan to make each book suffer. He doesn't tell Tony anything. He tells them to go kill everyone in the other books. I don't know.
Peter, what do you think of the word? What do you think of the name Peter?
Yes.
Before I get on with what I thought about it, the issue, I wanted to rehash my trade and pacing complaint. Jeff Johns had just, you know, wrapped up four issues of Green Lantern, and that was like an entire story. I mean, it wasn't the greatest of stories, but it took him four issues to tell a story of Sinestro recruits Hal Jordan to go save his own planet. Four issues, you know, and that's a big fucking deal. You got thousands of Sinestro Corps members on that planet, and yet we're six issues into this, and Tony Bedard has barely got this team together, and it's,
well, to be fair, it was kind of one story already when we had the whole getting together the team thing and dealing with the Guardians, and this is kind of like a sub-split into a secondary story with the what you're thinking of as the story is the overarching story. At least that's what I understand.
I don't see a difference between them finding the Orrery and them, you know, grouping together and fighting the Guardians. I feel like they have
a whole different enemy set, a whole different goal from when they started.
What was the goal before?
Because it's funny because they're still there.
They actually have a goal now. That's the point.
Well, there's an argument. I thought the end of the Larfleas reveal was that Larfleas is the one who took the rings for some reason, and then I forgot that he wasn't, because in this issue they make the point to say, I guess he's the guy who took the ring. So, I mean, Brandon's right in saying that they haven't resolved their initial conflict.
Yeah, they did have
a climax with the first thing, but it was four issues, and they're not going to put four issues in a trade.
Like, it's an overarching story is what I'm trying to say. And I don't think Invictus is the guy who did either, Archie or Invictus. I think – because he mentions that he's surprised to see the rings. He's like, I haven't seen these in ages. Like, apparently millions of years ago, whenever he last showed up. So he's not the guy either. He's connected somehow to the rings. He's fought with ring users apparently, but
he's
not familiar with most of the spectrum or the whole ring setup. So he couldn't have been the one who did this.
Well, that's the thing though. He doesn't really make it clear that, you know, he's not – familiar with the Blue Lanterns and the Sar Sapphires. I mean, because...
But he is familiar with Larfleas.
Why would Larfleas even have gotten around? I mean, we were in the impression Larfleas was in a cave for millions of years, and that he had to be there for argument's sake.
Well, we don't know how long he had that ring.
We don't know if Invictus was just going around the universe and just ran into that planet and got attacked as soon as he got there. Or he ran into a construct and chased it back to its planet. Because remember, one of the original concepts for the Lanterns was that he would send out his constructs to steal for him. Because one planet's not going to satisfy this guy's greed.
It could have just been a Larfleas construct. Yeah, he might not have actually seen Larfleas. Larfleas. It could have just been a Larfleas construct.
That is true. He could have sent
but
a construct.
Like, why wouldn't the? I mean, if he's running around doing that, especially with all these different worlds, and why would the Guardians allow that? I mean, I'm sure that's going to be part of the story because they're making
no,
the point to make.
I'm
Larfleas
sure it's not
an overarching bad guy and stuff. So, but still, I mean, why would? It's just like one of those things where it's like, no, he's supposed to be in the same room for a billion years. Otherwise, the Guardians would have fought him and stuff.
Nobody told Tony.
Just one of those, like, nobody told the NTT. Nobody told Tony. Yeah.
you know, we could get a job being editors for this book, just telling him continuity.
Continuity editor. That's a title that DC should probably have.
they don't.
It's one of the duties of editor, and he just doesn't do his job right. But. Yeah.
Apparently the editorial staff on Green Lantern is not the best.
I have a problem too with the structure of the issue. The way the cliffhanger at the end is that Belize is – I mentioned it before. There's a really hilarious panel where Fatality is like, where's Belize? And the way it's drawn, it looks like Belize is just helping out in the background vomiting on something. And later we realize it's supposed to be that she's thinking of Belize. Just like really funny to think of her vomiting on the panel.
Just imagining
– I think of Belize, I think of vomit.
Like where's – well, I mean, yeah. Like where's Belize? Let me imagine her.
Imagine her and she will appear.
And then it's funny because then the cliffhanger at the end is Blee somehow got away and she's like, find Lanterina, and they're like, he's somewhere in here, and she's like, I guess I'll have to burn it all. I'm like, I don't see any – I mean, if
if the other seven guys got their asses trashed by this one dude, I don't see how you're going to make any difference. And plus, I don't see how you're going to destroy the orrery, consider that, again, the dude who controls it, protects it, is so much more powerful. So why is that the cliffhanger?
He literally sleeps in a star. I think he's pretty tough.
It's kind of like the cliffhanger to the famous cliffhanger of Wolverine and the Hellfire Club, you know, where he gets thrown in the basement and the way the issue ends, he's like, I'm going to cut some people's faces. And it's like, it's not as impressive. It's like, Dark Side. Yeah, it's like if there was an issue, I mean, and it's different if it's Wolverine because he's Wolverine. I mean, there's a certain amount of, like, you know, he's an established enough character. He's not a character that just, like, you know, gets drowned by Larfleeze every issue in her own title and hasn't done anything in this and is wearing stupid wings on her head, you know? Like, we never talk about the stupid wings on her head, but they're very stupid. I don't want you to have wings on her head. You're like an idiot lady.
You know, for one of the points I'm going to make, looking at the scene, to me, I see it as this scene wasn't in the original script, but then he was told, hey, by the way, this character is going to disappear for about, you know, for a long period of time and come back later. So you got to fix that. I think this was just something kind of forced on him when he realized, hey, this guy's going to take my character away for a while.
Yeah, he's – I mean, there's been a few times
This arc might have just been dragged out because his character was pulled away and he had some kind of plan in his mind, but then he was like, oh, crap, what am I going to do? Okay, they'll fight for a whole issue.
It's just nobody cares about Tony. He's like, Milligan wants Bleeze. Oh, well, I was using her. Yeah, Milligan wants her. Oh, okay.
It's like, okay, you get her back now, okay? But now we're taking Monk. What?
Yeah,
exactly.
They're taking all of his characters constantly.
I think, and Tony Bedard's shown that before in his writing. He's always been writing kind of the tertiary title, and there's been multiple storylines where he's gone out of his way to be like, all right, I can't use this character. All right, this event is happening. I'm going to try to write my – he's actually comes up with, good for him, interesting ways to actually incorporate it within the story. It's just if you're actually just reading New Guardians, you're a little confused about where the hell everybody is and why they're doing it.
Yeah,
so,
and now
he fails on a single issue, fails for a series.
Because if you just read New Guardians and you wonder why Bleeze just randomly left, it's blabbering like an idiot, vomiting blood, and now she's back. She's speaking intelligent sentences.
Well, and now he's you know, stuck writing a Quaternary book because they decided to put Red Lanterns above him, even though I mean it's pretty pointless.
That's sad.
Yeah,
that is terribly sad.
Right, and Red Lanterns is a book that I mean should barely exist, but whatever.
It just barely exists enough to screw over Tony.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know what? Before we get to talking about a book that's not on the docket today, about Bleeze's wings, you know, I think my problem with the little wings on her head is that they're under a mask. Like, how difficult must that be to put on? Like,
well, I don't think those are, unless I'm mistaken, if it's just that is the mask. Like, she has a mask that has little wings on it, because I think when we saw her without the helmet, she has just hair. Like, I don't think she has. Does she have wings on her head?
No, she doesn't. So yeah. I don't know. Is that a byproduct of the transformation? Because, you know, she didn't have bones on her back either.
I think it's silly. I think it's just one of those – it's like a design function. It's funny to think about, like –
It's like Batman. He has little points on his head. She has little wings on her head. It's stupid.
It's supposed to be bat ears.
No, I mean, it's stupid. It's like stupid. I'm not saying it makes sense. I'm just saying it's like that.
It reminds me of the best use of superfluous wings ever, Namor the Submariner's and it's really cool. It looks really cool. It's definitely a huge part of his look, but like your legs fly, like they you have epic balance. Like,
well,
to be fair,
the Flash also has wings on his head.
Well, he's got lightning
bolts. Those are damn near his ears though.
No, Wally had lightning bolts, but Barry had wings like Mercury.
I guess he did, right?
Yeah.
Well, now he's got lightning bolts. But they are on his ears, so it's close enough to the kind of, you know, space they should be. Hers, it's awkward, too, because they're not back. You know, Batman's are up. Hers are kind of to the side. Like, it's like that whole...
Barry's went back, and hers are, like, just, like, pointing out. Like, what?
Yeah, it's just whatever name from the Darkstalkers games, Lilith or Morrigan or whoever. Like, yeah, the succubus was or whatever. It's just that kind of like superfluous anime design kind of thing. The same thing with the bone wings. The bone wings don't make any sense either, but nobody's going to complain about those, I guess. But
anyway, speaking of art, Tyler Kirkham, I know you guys are not the biggest fans.
He did an interview or something, right?
We're working on it.
I did tell him at the time that he was doing free sketches and I didn't get in his line, right?
What we come to expect from you at cons, but yes.
I talked to him when he wasn't doing sketches because there was no line at all, but I was like, oh, he's doing sketches and they're bodies. I don't want a body of from Tyler Kirkham.
Anyway, I didn't hate this issue. I thought it was pretty enjoyable from an art point. If you look at the splash page with Arkillo being blasted, it's really gory, and the coloring really helps insinuate how awesome it is. It's one of those moments where you realize how great this book can be, because it's not the typical DC superhero muscle bound people, and it's that grunge kind of art. And I think when you see Arkillo versus Invictus, it really brings out the best in him. But then when you get the panels where you see Kyle dropping the ship, and then the next panel, Kyle looks, you know, like he's just got out the shower or something, and it's terrible. But yeah, I think if you focus on the action in Tyler's art, then you'll come to enjoy it more. Because I mean, the panel where he tries to show the entire page, actually, where Arkillo jumps at Invictus is pretty great. It's actually pretty great.
I mean, I think there's a certain amount of dynamism, I guess, to his work and stuff, and that you can kind of appreciate. But overall, it's like his anatomy is inconsistent. You know, Kyle Rayner, even on the cover, Kyle Rayner's torso is like, you know, 700% of his body. You know, he does the whole ass, vagina, butt pose thing that's kind of unforgivable. All his figures' faces look the same. If they didn't have different masks and stuff, they would be noticeable. The sequence where Arkillo and Invictus is fighting is really beneficial to him, because he's bad at laying out pages and he's bad at filling up the pages with actual content and telling a story. Those pages are beneficial, I think, because they're huge splash pages. And it's kind of like, almost anybody could draw a huge splash page of two dudes fighting and something breaking it looking pretty cool. But if you think about it, even the way he draws it is kind of awkward. Like, there's that thing where Arkillo's punching the ground and says, "I smell fear," and Invictus is making weird arms at him, you know. And then, like, there's a huge collapsing structure right next to it that's done in this kind of thin panel where you can't even tell what's happening. And then the next panel, they're both standing on top of each other, punching each other. So it's, I don't know. I mean, I appreciate that you could think it's cool. And I think that there's one panel, double page of Arkillo getting blasted in the face, looks all right. But I mean, overall, he's kind of a poor draftsman, and visit print to me, his art is not attractive to my eyeballs.
I mean, so. it's like Michael Turner, except I've never read an Aspen comic, so I've never seen interiors from Michael Turner. But the face is just, you know, all the same, and there's no yeah. attempt at drawing humans accurately.
Yeah, he was the worst.
Yeah. Rest in peace. So
I don't care if it's resting anywhere. I just use the words to, like, you know. I mean, you know, y'all know. I mean, like, you know, whatever. Evil people. I don't say, you shouldn't say evil.
Wow, sure. A bad artist.
Someone can
be the equal. I mean, evil.
I didn't say Hitler. I didn't do the Hitler.
He drew poorly.
Hitler's dead. We don't respect him. You know, no. But no. I mean, you know, just because he's dead doesn't mean he didn't do shitty work.
No, his art was horrible. I don't disagree with that. You know. I'm saying, like, yeah. I'm not disrespecting the man, just his art, because it wasn't good. Moving on, we should talk about Green Lantern Corps, issue 6, in which John kills more people.
I have huge, huge problems with this issue. So
my biggest problem, real quick, is when they bust out and he says, "I piloted it and then recharged it somehow." And those are his, like, he says, "somehow." He doesn't say he did something. He said, "it charged it somehow."
Yeah, he doesn't know what happened. Like,
no.
Yeah.
He's like, "I did it somehow." He's like, you willed it. Yeah, sure, but now I can't do anything. And then Guy and Co. come in. And then a jump cuts twice in two pages. It's like a little while later, we're all scared. 24 hours later, you're in trouble.
You know, I really wouldn't want to be a member of any team that Jon Stewart is on, because he takes things really too seriously. You get tortured, and so you're naturally upset, and you're less of a tough guy than Jon Stewart is, so when you're about to snap, he snaps you.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, because I remember when Mogo got killed, we were all like, wow, like, that's just something else to worry. Like, Jon Stewart's character has just been, after Geoff Johns, just defined as the guy who killed the planet. And those of us that have a little bit longer memory remember him as a character who also killed his own sister and stuff. So it's like, Jon Stewart's whole history is like, he's already got this whole history of accidentally killing important stuff. And then
he's just straight up murdering people.
Yeah, then he kills Mogo. We're like, okay, like, this guy needs something else to do. Like, considering, you know, for years people have been like, give Jon Stewart more of a spotlight. And they kind of said, you know, how can we do that in the worst possible way? And now he does this too. And it, honestly, in the middle of the story by itself, without in a vacuum, it's fine. I don't mind. Like, that's kind of the thing you kind of see in stories to ratchet up the drama all the time. You know, the guy's about to betray the team, so his teammate shoots him. And, you know, I've read much harder stuff. But in the context of the series and the scene itself, it's very, very problematic. And it kind of leads me to the kind of problematic politics of the Green Lantern Corps in general. You know, I mean, the problem with the scene is that he breaks the guy's neck and then literally the next page.
Immediately.
Immediately. Like, he breaks the guy's neck, and then he grabs the other guy and escapes. Like, and he says, okay, I escaped. So
he couldn't escape first.
Exactly.
You were strong enough to escape and murder the guy, and then you escape. So, and then he's like, oh, I only had enough to – it's like, okay, so either you didn't realize you could do what you're doing until after you already killed the guy, or – you know, you didn't have enough strength to carry you and another guy, so you'd let the traitor hang. Or you deliberately murdered him, knowing you could have rescued him. Like, you were just so pissed off he was going to betray you that you killed him. That seems like it's something that probably isn't happening, because that seems like an extra malicious thing for John Stu to do, right? Except in the context of this issue alone and this whole storyline, that seems totally par for the course for the Green Lantern Corps. I remember a Peter Tomasi written issue where the Guardians rounded up all the prisoners after I think before Blackest Night, all the prisoners
gangland executed them
and just murdered them all. And Kyle tried to talk him out of it, and then it didn't work. And then Guy said, "We'll we'll fight another battle another day." I'm like, I don't understand. What's a more important battle than murdering every single prisoner you have? I mean, what other moral argument is there after that? You know, and since then the Guardians have kind of like done even shadier stuff and even shadier stuff and let their worst enemy, genocidal maniac, join them and brainwash Gantt and stuff. And this stuff is happening and happening and happening. And they're like, man, that's crazy. Anyway, keep working for them. Keep working for free for them. You know, and at this point, the Geoff Johns, as established, they don't get paid, so it's not a monetary organization. So it's a group of – and there's all kinds – and he's – all of his storylines have been about how the Guardians are motivated
They do
control.
Get free food. So
right, they do get free food, except then they go to Guy Gardner's bar to pay for some other food. but just let me ramble on for a second here. Then the Guardians he's going out of his way to prove that all their actions in the history of the universe – to protect the universe, have actually been controlling the universe. So essentially, we have a bunch of people who are voluntarily working for megalomaniacal tyrants, and they know it, and they're okay with it. In this issue, not only does John Stewart murder a fellow Lantern because he's a traitor, not because he had to, but because he's a traitor. Like, he could have saved him and didn't. He killed him because he's a traitor. We also see the Green Lanterns kill two more prisoners. Now, it's one thing, like, okay, Guy Gardner has a Dirty Dozen team. They're obviously scumbags. They're obviously stealing from Guy Gardner. So what kind of Green Lanterns can defend the universe while robbing their fellow Lanterns? But it's one thing. All right, Peter Tomasi has established that Guy Gardner tortures suspects, murders people, doesn't mind. Okay, fine. The problem is if you were a policeman, you go into a prison, grab two prisoners, bring them somewhere, put dynamite on them and throw them to the enemies, someone in the chain of command is going to notice these guys are missing. And then the next storyline is going to be the trial of the Green Lanterns, whatever, because John Stewart killed the Lantern, and it's going to be a whole big thing. But at no point is Salak going to go, where are those two prisoners you guys took? You know, like, at no point is any Green Lantern going to go, like, wait, what happened to Fat Man and Little Boy? Like, I captured them months ago.
It's like bad cop, dick cop.
There's some severe corruption here. I mean, John Stewart just it has the history, apparently, of just straight up murdering people. And you'd think the Guardians would be fine with that, but apparently they put him on trial for doing their own greedy, evil job.
It's one of those things, yeah, he murders the guy, fine, and it's really poor writing that he escapes immediately after. But in the context of everything that's happened so far in this storyline, you know, that the Green Lanterns, they attacked – now, they were pirates, but they unprovoked attacked a ship – killed them and then robbed them to get weapons, even though they could have gotten weapons from anywhere else because of the fucking Green Lantern Corps, you know. and then the next issue, they take two prisoners and they murder them to defeat their enemies. I mean, there's no equivocation for this. If the American military, which I'm sure they have whatever you want to be cynical, paranoid, whatever, if the American military took two guys who were known terrorists, put dynamite on them and threw them out of a plane to blow up a building, they're breaking every single law that we've ever signed about war. And it's just, okay, Salak's not going to go, where the fuck are those guys? The Guardians aren't going to go, Guy Gardner, how could you murder those two prisoners that were under our watch? Because they have a history of doing so. I mean, like, so essentially what we're reading is reading, and they're not cops because they're not defending any laws, because we haven't seen the Green Lanterns defend laws in years. We've seen them have turf wars. So essentially we're seeing a military force that's defending and expanding its territory, working for fanatical evil dudes who are only concerned with controlling all emotion in the universe. So
it's a gang army.
It's Nazis, you know, especially considering the first part of this storyline was called Triumph of the Will, which is only a famous phrase because it's the name of a Nazi propaganda film. So it's no longer a subtext that Peter Tomasi loves the Nazis. He's actually writing the Green Lanterns as Nazis. I mean,
Hitler is the secondary character of the other main book.
It's stunning.
listen to this. The weirdest thing is, think about this. Of the four Human Lanterns, the only two left in the Corps who are accepted members of the Corps are murderers who kidnap people, steal, rob, and kill. They threw out one of the good guys first and replaced him with Space Hitler, and the other guy they threw out because he dared question them. The only two people who are Human Lanterns who don't murder people and steal and rob and kill are the only two ones thrown out, and they replace them with Space Hitler.
And by the way, there's currently technically no Lanterns in 2814. Right.
Well, yeah, because we saw the voodoo stuff that, like, you know, and if you're reading any other DC comic, you realize that Daemonites and other alien races are running rampant and destroying untold amounts of people, you know, and the Lanterns are nowhere to be found, except Guy Gardner is hanging out with the Red Lanterns, I guess. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't understand how people could just read this and be like, okay. I mean, it's one thing if it happened once in a while, but go through Tomasi's history of the series. I mean, what about the Steve Buscemi character parody like 3 years ago that what's his name? What's the fucking Daxamite's name again? Saddam Yat. Saddam Yat's mom crashed a car into a building and killed him, and no one batted an eye. They're like, fuck him. He's a murderer. Like, you know, it's like, that's not the way it works. Why even put guys in cells? What do the science cells do? Are they rehabilitative, or do they just lock guys in holes until they decide to murder them? I mean, it's not even that I'm a liberal and a progressive, because I am. But, like, what person condones this behavior? It's a fascism. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, you know? Like,
yeah, no,
especially considering now, this is definitely a politically charged situation, because you're talking about essentially an Al-Qaeda type situation or a Noriega type situation where the Green Lanterns gave this people training and ability to be these awesome warriors, and then said, screw you, we don't need you anymore. And so they're running rampant all over the universe. So essentially they've created their own kind of, you know, the way that the Russian and American military has kind of created Al-Qaeda and stuff. They've done this. So essentially we're watching a storyline where America comes in mad at Al-Qaeda that they abandoned them, murders a bunch of prisoners to defeat them, and then makes them spend the rest of their lives digging graves for people that they're kind of partially responsible for killing in the first place. So I don't know. I was watching the Green Lantern movie again the other day, I guess because I hate myself. But I was watching the Green Lantern movie the other day, and like this kind of attitude that they have with the Green Lantern books now, it's kind of tinging my whole perception of the franchise. Like, have they always been these fascist thugs that don't follow any law besides territorial? Like, it's insane. It's kind of like watching something like, you know, Sons of Anarchy or Breaking Bad, where everybody's a dick, you know, but it's supposed to be superheroes, so I don't know.
That's nothing new. We've seen in countless stories where somebody says, there is no guardian law, like, there's no universal law that you should be here. I mean, because if you just go back to the Sinestro storyline that just ended, I forgot her name already, and I picked her as character of the year. You know who I'm talking about. The woman on Kurogars, like, look, it was our decision to accept you as a protector, you know? And, like, so it's not necessarily where you have to have a Green Lantern in your sector. You know, it's like you don't sign a petition that says we need a Green Lantern or we get a Green Lantern. No treaty. Right. So for anybody to say that, you know, we blew up our prisoners. I mean, they have nobody to report to but the Guardians. And exactly. I mean, at this point, why would the Guardians care?
Well, why do they even have prisoners? Exactly my point. Because the Guardians don't care because they're evil and stuff.
Well, at one point, there was a legitimate war. You know,
right.
And
still,
at that
even
point,
in wartime,
were a different. I think there's a lot that you can dive into, and I don't think we'll get that out of Green Lantern Corps. We'll get into the politics.
Sorry, exactly. That's my point. I think the point is Peter Tomasi just thought it would be cute and funny to kill these two prisoners in order to defeat, because he's like, oh, how can I beat them? Oh, I can
absolutely.
You know, but he doesn't – that's what I'm saying. Like, the kind of undercurrent of all of his writing, like, you know, Guy Gardner punching a dude in the face till he tells him what he wants and stuff, like, he doesn't think of it as political. He's like, no, it's fine. They're just doing what they're doing. But it's like, that's what I'm like, – why isn't this – ever since they killed the prisoners, I was, like, really upset about it when I was reading them. Like, I was, like, screaming at the page, like, talk him out of it. Talk him out of it. This is awful. And it just – they just did it, you know? And,
I mean,
like,
the way it was –
that day, I've been like, this needs to blow up in their face, and it hasn't. Every subsequent storyline has had another incident with the Green Lanterns do something so completely immoral that there's no way they can be seen as good guys anymore.
But before – like when Tomasi was on Corps with Gleason. back before in the pre-New 52 when he was writing Corps, you had – it was Guy and Kyle, and Guy was, you know, he was an asshole, and Kyle was somewhat of a moral compass, and he'd be like, oh no, this is wrong, and then Guy would do it anyway or whatever. But like now you have Guy who's an asshole and John who's a dick, and so it's like you just have a bunch of morally ambiguous at best people running around, quote unquote, saving who knows what. As opposed to, you know, but before it was like you had Kyle and he'd say, hey, this is kind of bad, we shouldn't kill prisoners of war. And then Gao would be like, yeah, you're right. Oh, whoops, accidentally hit the button. But now it's just like you got two guys who are okay with doing this, and they are doing it. And, you know, like every buddy cop movie has you got a good cop and a bad cop or something along those lines. Or
a bad cop and a better cop in this case.
Right. Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Here we have two cops who are just not they're just both morally gray, dark gray even.
let me get to this John thing. I do think it was ridiculous for them to just pull John right out of the room moments after. But I think if you keep looking at that panel, you'll see that one guy, well, at the issue, you'll see that one guy is already dead. You'll see that one guy is already about to tap out, and who knows how long the other guy is going to last. You can obviously tell that John didn't have a great plan, you know, because if he did, he would have did it in the middle of his, you know, sentence. You know, there was no information that needed to be gathered at that point. It was just, all right, I'm out of here. So I think if he had a plan to actually escape, then he would have done that with that guy. If you turn the page after the neck crack, you'll see John, you know, literally lifting himself up while he's being tortured again. And it's like maybe he's just running on adrenaline. And between that and we already know he has excessive will or whatever that scene was, between that and the technology used on him, that powered their escape. So it was just a luck of chance that it happened.
It might just be one of those
right
one
now.
Of those a few hours later things, and they just didn't insert the because they did that twice within a page.
I think, like I said, I don't think that the intention was for Peter Tomasi to imply that guy that John Stewart decided to execute the guy because he hates traitors. I think it's kind of like the way the scene is presented. Is that, and especially the way the next couple scenes are presented with the murdering the other two prisoners and the punishment at the end and the rest of the storyline, it seems that if he hadn't done it, then someone else would have done it anyway. Like, would it have been a surprise to you if one of the Dirty Dozen guys that Guy Gardner rounded up found out that guy was a traitor and they rescued him and then he killed him anyway? No.
Let's look at it at the other side. It had John's guy, the guy who was tortured with John, had he snapped that neck? Would we have got? We would have been like, oh damn, you murderous bastard! No, this wouldn't even be as much of an issue.
No, I wouldn't even care. I don't disagree. But the thing is that John, you know, he is famous. Like he famously blew up Zanchi. He famously just blew up Mogo, and now he's killing another guy, and he's going to go on trial for it. Like and you know most people wouldn't remember that, but like like Zanchi and Mogo are two big huge things that he did, and now this happens, and so I agree it wouldn't be any sort of thing if it was any other guy, but it's John, because and now John is known as he's just killing things all over, and so it's like so that is why it's I don't disagree right, that, well, that it's biased because it's John.
And I do think that there's a disconnect in the story. There should have been a bit clearer. I do think the idea is that we're not supposed to assume that he did it maliciously. I just think the story kind of gives us ammunition to believe that if we want. I agree that he didn't kill Mogo maliciously,
either, but he still killed Mogo. That's the thing. Like,
yeah, here's what I think. I think that Peter Tomasi had John doing this because it's supposed to be a big twist, and it's a good twist for the character because
a very big twist.
Yeah, I mean, he's done it a million times, and it's kind of like you saw that coming, sort of. But it's Peter Tomasi likes throwing these kind of black things happening. Black as the evil, not black as in John Stewart, I guess. But like he likes throwing these like dark story elements in there. As like a shock value, and he loves it. And this
dark as an evil, not dark as in John Stewart.
Oh God!
Dark as an evil, not dark as in a minority. Yeah, like yeah, but and he likes throwing them in there. And I think but he probably realized that if all I show is John Stewart doing that, then people will get pissed that he didn't do anything in the storyline except torture and kill a guy. So I have to show him at least try to escape so he doesn't look like a punk. And then he did that, and he didn't put two and two together and be like, oh, he probably could have just grabbed that guy and escaped. I think what happened was Peter Tomasi was like, I like this idea, and I like this idea. I don't care about making them mesh together.
See, I disagree completely. I think with solicitations telling us in the future that we're going to get John, you know, on trial.
Yeah.
He deserves to be on trial, the murderer.
Granted, he murdered a Lantern, but if you look at it, it's
a lot of Lanterns.
It's, I'm going to get to that. Right now, you got to look at it as what's going on in the Green Lantern universe right now. Who are the real bad guys here? The Green motherfucking Lanterns. Guardians. The Guardians are evil people, and it's essentially
one of them again.
It's essentially running down to the core now that you've got Guy Gardner going every trip he goes on. He has to recruit badass people, you know, because the Green Lantern Corps is just that bad at this point.
Well, I don't. I mean, disagree, I'm just saying. I'm just talking about the way I believe the story was written and why there's a huge disconnect in the middle of the story.
I think John killed Peter.
I don't care that he killed the guy. I mean, specifically that he
so
escaped.
So he can tell the story of the trial. I think this is all for the trial.
Right. No, I agree. I just mean to say is the reason that he kills the guy and then immediately escapes, where we're all looking at it being like, why didn't you just rescue that guy before you had to kill him? I think Tomasi was writing it, and he liked the idea of John killing the guy, and he liked the idea of John escaping just to show him do something badass in the issue itself. Because really, if you don't have John escape, the climax would have played the same exact way. They could have just stormed the castle John was in. I think he just didn't want to have John sit there and be tortured and then kill a guy. So that's all I mean. All
right, Eric, now you have to rant for 10 minutes about something nice.
I'm sorry.
Fernando Paz.
That's great. Yeah, that's great.
How about we dive into our crystal balls and see what we want to see with the trial?
Well, Colton didn't say anything about the issue much, right? Do you want to say
something? Yeah, I want to hear something. Here's something positive.
Yeah.
Frankly speaking, I'm just waiting for the Guardians to show up at the trial and say, like, John Stewart, you've killed several Lanterns. We want you back as a Guardian. Because that's what it feels like at this point. John Stewart has become evil. Those guys, they're all murderers.
You see him as evil? They're
sick murdering bastards.
I don't see.
I think they enjoy it at this point. You can't kill and torture and murder that many people and not come off as somewhat of a sick person.
I think you can draw a line emotionally, because I think when he kills Mogul, you're like, whoa, he killed Mogul. I thought he had a whole problem with that. And then he's totally okay with it. So that you have their story leeway for there to be either like, he is actually okay with it. It's not a problem, because that's just the kind of guy John Stewart is. He'll cut the throat if he has to. Or John's so kind of, you know, just completely disconnected from the Mogul thing because he had to do it. He's like, but I feel so emotionally disconnected, that you can get a lot of emotional ringing out of him doing this, because now he's forcing himself to be that guy that can make the hard decision. I think I kind of want them to see – I want to see at the end of the trial them to kind of elevate John's character to be doing something else, you know, because by the end of the trial, I think the next crossover is going to start. So you're going to get like the Third Army stuff or something. So I want there to be something like that. I want there to be, by the end, maybe force John to become an Alpha Lantern or something. Just something fundamentally change about John's character, and really address him as somebody, instead of a guy who keeps accidentally murdering people and stuff, give him something else to do, maybe. I don't think
intentionally murdering people instead.
It's not I don't think that would be a change in character. I just think it'd be another aspect of John, because we don't get anything besides that. You know, that's the only side we see, is him being the guy who has to make tough decisions.
I mean, it seems that Colton just sees any murder in any form as evil. Any sort of killing is evil.
No, I think every time he's killed, it has been justified.
Yeah,
no. Sanchi was an accident because he was overconfident. When he killed his sister, it was an accident because he was overconfident. When he killed Mogo, it might have been necessary. And then when he killed this guy, he saw it as necessary. It actually turned out not to be necessary. Because not at all. Yeah, because they needed the codes to get into the fortress, and seconds after he killed the guy, Guy Gardner and all his people showed up. And then the guy defended him. I mean, the whole thing is at the end, what happened to the other guy? And the guy goes, no, he was tortured to death, you know, because he wants to back John Stewart up and stuff. But I think playing up
– He might only be backing up John Stewart, so he won't kill him.
That's the real hook of the story. I mean, that's the real thematic, emotional hook of the story, that John Stewart killed Mogul, and there was debate in fandom and within the story itself whether or not it was necessary. Even though it seemed more necessary than it was left, it was kind of like, well, he did have to do something, and if that's the only thing he could have done, that's the only thing he could have done. This is a little bit more gray, because he did he overreact? Is this something he should have done? So the idea that John Stewart is going to constantly deliberately kill people now when he maybe shouldn't is, I guess he's graduating from accidental manslaughter to third degree murder.
Yeah.
Like, self-defense, I guess, is what it is.
Self-defense?
But,
yeah. Obviously, he's being tortured.
Yeah.
I don't, yeah. I mean, I don't see the Guardians prosecuting, I guess. Prosecuting. I don't, do the Guardians have the right, the ability to prosecute? I don't know. I don't see them taking drastic action. Against John Stewart. First of all, because he's a main character. Although then again, they've already kicked two main characters out of the core. What's the third? And
no, Kyle left on his own. They didn't kick him out.
They formally said, "Yeah, you're out."
They pushed him out.
Let us torture you and take those rings off, or you're going down.
But yeah. So like I don't see them actually getting rid of John. Maybe like, oh well, be careful now, and maybe like Eric was
don't
saying,
kill any more Leonards.
Yeah, Zordon says try not to kill anyone else.
Okay, John, like. It's the last time we're going to tell you.
It's official. There's apparently a new rule requiring that all lanterns kill or be kicked out of the core. All the human lanterns who don't kill get kicked out. All lanterns who kill stay in.
If you think about it, actually, it does seem weird for the Guardians to get mad at him about, if that's what it's about, killing another lantern and killing Mulgo and stuff and kind of throwing everything in disarray.
Because he has that excellent defense if he wants to.
Well, because the idea is that you guys gave us the ability to kill. You keep putting me in these situations where I have to do this sort of thing. Like, it was literally just me and three other guys versus everybody. I had to kill Mulgo. In this kind of situation, this is completely justifiable, whatever, and stuff. But,
There's a point.
I think the actual ending... It makes more sense for the Guardians to be like, John Stewart, you're awesome. We're going to promote you because you're the kind of guy we're looking for in our organization.
You're going to be a Guardian. That would get along right with us.
You got to go places, kid.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I think making him an Alpha Lander would be – they tried to make him an Alpha Lander in the first place. So actually, this all kind of tracks. They realize that he puts duty, I guess, above everything else. You know,
duty
of like,
life.
So – the idea, you know, it makes sense. So, not that it, I think it's almost like I kind of wanted to be an Alpha Lantern, and it would suck because you know you don't want to turn.
Well, we already know it's not because of the third army thing. But
I mean, it's not gonna be an Alpha Lantern. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like maybe they're just gonna change. They make him drill sergeant.
Third army, but are they really gonna just? Are they really gonna like? Are they really gonna go there? You know what I mean? Like,
are they really gonna make the black guy Hitler?
Yeah, exactly. They really mean that guy that much of a dick.
They say they're going to kill him and they fake a murder just to say, we want you in our third army.
Yeah.
This is the secret first member.
Or maybe they demote him from Honor Guard to Green Lantern of Sector 2814. Oh. Doubtful.
Ooh, what a demotion.
What a demotion. I mean, go home.
John Stewart really is at the point where it's like, okay, you have excuses, but there's a limit to how many people on our side you can kill before you run out of excuses.
And that limit is 34.
Your ratio between Leonards and evil people is really out of balance right now.
You've killed 7 evil people in the past 5 years and 200 lanterns.
Yeah, it's like, John, and, We have a lot of prisoners in the – so just start shooting the prisoners to make it up for
you. You're really abusing this whole ring goes after another guy thing.
Maybe there's another twist. Maybe there's a different reason, you know.
So John, you kill lanterns, huh? Well, we'd like you to go find Hal and Kyle and go talk to them as you do other lanterns.
Yeah. I actually think that's where they're headed. I mean, Eric said that he might head up the Third Army. I think that's the only way you could – you know, take this character in an interesting way at this point. And if he does that, then you have to look at what I've always said, that the Alpha Lanterns aren't like, you know, just bad people. They're the IED of the core. They're like, they're not
like
there.
These evil machines, but they're
the internal investigation.
Affairs.
Exactly. Yeah.
You said and IED. I'm like, what are you talking about? Oh, internal affairs. Right.
Yeah. Which is funny because they don't actually, they never have. They've never resolved any cases ever. Like, ever. Like ever. They brought Lara in, and that in their first storyline, and then she escaped and was killed.
Boudica gets blown.
Boudica
was teams sometimes.
She resolved the missed case of her missing personality, and then she disappeared.
And then she lost personality again. And then they what was the other one they did? you know, they got taken over by the new gods almost caused the end of the universe. Yeah, this is a good track record, guys.
The Guardians have not been doing too well lately, huh?
Well, I do want to say really quick.
To be fair, if you watch any cop show, the Internal Affairs is basically the villain, so.
Yeah, it's really frustrating for me because as someone who, like, you know, again, really liberal progressive, I appreciate that there's a force that's just making sure that guys who enforce the laws enforce the laws properly.
That's why they're there.
Yeah, because that's what they're there for. So when I watch a show and they're like, that IAD scumbag, and he always turns out to be a scumbag. He always, like, you know, has sex with a guy's, you know, dead sister who's 4 years older.
And ends up as the guy who murdered the guy.
Or yeah, he's even more corrupt. Like, you know, I know you're on the take because I'm on three takes. Oh, no. Like,
who was that in Gotham Central? Was it Jim Corrigan? Was he the evil guy in Eternal Affairs?
I think he was a coroner.
His
girlfriend was an IA or something.
You know, with this whole corruption thing, it's the problem is the Internal Affairs can't correct the corruption if they're under the take of their bosses at the top of the chain who are also corrupt.
Yeah,
if the whole chain is corrupt, then what do you do?
Well, they
you murder lanterns.
That's John's solution to the corruption. Kill everyone.
I do want to say to clarify.
Kill them till they're dead.
It's kind of jumping off topic, but I'll try to bring it back around. The next issue of New Guardians ends the storyline because 8 and 9 have different storylines. The only reason I know this is because I was looking up what the solicitation for the next couple issues of Green Lantern. We have 2 more issues dealing with John getting arrested, and then we start a storyline where John's on trial. So we actually have another 3 months before John even goes on trial. Apparently it's going to take them 2 more months to arrest him. So
they're crossing over with 12 or 13. Yeah. So
I think the Third Army stuff is going to happen after the big Alpha War stuff, because Alpha War is what they're calling the thing with the whatever-ma-call-its. But the next issue, it looks like John Stewart's going to have to bring this guy back to his family is what it's going to be. So,
wow, so apparently, so I guess they're going to try to recruit John instead of go kill Kyle?
Well, I appreciate that.
Sorenik's got to go after Kyle, right? Didn't that Sorenik say it?
I think she might be going on her own choice rather than
I really think, especially because the next one of the upcoming storylines in New Guardians, I don't know if you guys don't want to hear solicits. If people are listening and don't want to know anything about solicits, then don't listen for the next 30 seconds. But one of the upcoming storylines in New Guardians is that Arkillo confronts the idea that, you know, Sinestro turned off all the Yellow Lantern rings, so he kind of turns against Sinestro. So I think with that, if you're having a crossover, I don't know why Sinestro can't show up. You know, like the idea being that could be where everything hinges on. They send the Alpha Lanterns after John Stewart, which makes all the Earth Lanterns hate the Alpha Lanterns, and then Sinestro shows up as now the poster boy. It's kind of like we talked to Tony, but basically I'm just looking for another Kyle Sinestro fight. But like,
it might be the perfect excuse,
and maybe something actually happens this time.
You need to give up.
I'm not. It's not going to happen. I know. I'll just pretend it didn't happen in continuity. Like, because now that they've rebooted the universe, I'm just going to say that didn't happen.
The fight didn't happen, or the entire arc didn't happen.
The fight didn't happen. The whole arc is not. I haven't seen the weapon yet either. So, you know, and Firestorm is different, so that completely changes the storyline. And maybe Kyle's
Firestorm was there for like 2 seconds,
but he was there. So
still changing everything.
Take away evidence from me. You know. And that took place on a Halloween, and there's no way that was one of the 5 Halloweens we've had since then. So, also, what else can I use to discount it? There's something else I was just thinking of. Either way, it didn't happen, I guess, is all I'm going to say. And Kyle got his powers in New York, so which means that he would have been at a Halloween thing in L.A. because it was in New York in the comic, because you have to reverse L.A. for New York every time it's been mentioned, because that's the new rules, right? Like, every time something happened in L.A. in the old universe, it actually happened in New York in this universe, so vice versa.
San Francisco, not.
Yeah. So, right. So we know there's no way that there's a Halloween parade that Sinestro would go to in San Francisco because he's trying to not seem as gay as he used to. So not to stereotype people live in San Francisco, but they have these really awesome, you know, trans parties and stuff. Yeah, they have these really awesome stereotypes. They have these really awesome Halloween parties and trans parties and stuff, and they're very cool. And Sinestro, who was implied being gay years ago, has been really backpedaling that. So, yeah.
So wait, if I understand this whole situation right,
the Weaponry didn't happen. Yeah.
No. What I'm understanding right now, 3 characters that Tony's writing in his book are having some issue or another forced onto him because of what another book writer wrote.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, they
just the Sinestro. The Arkillo situation with the battery because of Jeff Johns, the whole thing with Bleeze because of the whole thing with Red Lanterns, and then once again Johns decides to screw over Tony Bedard with the whole thing with Monk.
Well, this is where you can see the weakness in continuity, because there's a line of dialogue in the Green Lantern comic where Sinestro says this is going to take out all the local Sinestro core members. It's not going to take out the ones that are in Far Space. But then he doesn't subsequently say, I'm going to hunt those guys down. He just says, you know, I'm done, and walks away, which is one of those things where it's like, the logical story argument. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the argument is that he threw that lie in there because Arkillo's ring's still going to work over in New Guardians. So Geoff Johns is like, oh, shit, yeah, Arkillo. Well, Tony, here you go. Figure out a way to make that work. I'm done. Like, you know, and then he has no intention of having Sinestro track down all the other guys.
That's what I'm saying. Why would he?
Yeah, he wanted to stop them all in the first place.
No, he wanted to stop them from fucking up his planet. Arkillo's not on his planet.
They went against everything they wanted, yada, yada, yada.
The whole issue probably is that if he disconnected the battery, even if he turned off all the immediate rings, even the ones that still have a charge won't be able to recharge. That's why the situation comes in.
It's just one of those things where he said the whole thing was whatever. But yes, right. I'm just saying it's one of those things where continuity is being it's already being shoehorned around and stuff, and it's kind of like, I don't understand how you reboot your entire universe. You only have four titles, you know, and the same guys have been working on the last 4 years, and you still haven't figured out how to coordinate your shit, you know? Like,
I told you, it's the new editorial staff.
Doesn't matter. The new editorial staff should have been doing their job, you know? Like,
yeah, just because they're new editorial staff doesn't mean they didn't, like, it doesn't mean they don't have to, like, do their job, right? They still have to edit.
It's like you're waiting for the school bus and it doesn't show up. And it's like, oh, there's
a new bus driver.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Took us on a new route.
Yeah, like, oh, okay, then she's just not picking up Scotty anymore. All right, Scotty doesn't get picked up. That's the new rules for new drivers. Like, we lose a kid every time. Can't tell you who. But so whichever kid is like doesn't show up that day, that's the kid doesn't go to school anymore because the bus driver won't pick him up. A problem with the editorial switch up here. Yeah. Anyway,
you know this whole image of the next Green Lantern Corps number 7, it looks like a completely different lantern. So I'm just imagining that this is just the start of John Stewart's body count as he goes around killing more and more lanterns.
The blurb implied to me that he goes on a mission with a guy who dies and it's his fault again. And I'm like, no. I'm going to assume that this is not another guy.
It looks kind of like Abin Sur.
No, it's got to be a different – it's got to be
– yeah, Abin Sur came back from the dead in this new continuity and John Stewart just snaps his neck.
We have to believe it's the same guy. Like, I refuse to believe it's not the same guy. That's too ridiculous for him to be responsible for four deaths that he did not need to cause. Like,
in the past couple of days or minutes, really?
Well, four or five counting his sister, which I'm insisting still works in continuity and stuff because that's the story where Ion first showed up. But yeah, wow.
Yeah, he'll go over to hug his mother, but someone will tap his shoulder, so he'll snap his mother's neck like, oh, shit.
Where are all the entities now? Do you guys know offhand?
No one seems to care.
Earth, right? Maybe? Possibly?
That's the thing. Like... I think the entities should be used, especially the New Guardians book. I think it'd be a great place for them.
They were loose.
Let the New Guardians all have their own, you know, entity.
Because Krona rounded them up, right? And then what happened? And then
they,
I guess, are they on Oa?
They fight. No, there's a big fight, and they all split. I guess.
Get the hell out of here.
No,
I rely on you guys for this kind of stuff. You know, I don't give a shit.
Well, they just disappear. We don't see them again.
I remember, like, War of the Green Lantern or something, right? Something like that.
We should either ask Frankie or Andrew, because Frankie will automatically know which website to go to look it up, or Andrew will pretend he doesn't know for 10 minutes when he actually knows, and then he'll tell us. So we should call one of them right now and figure out what's going on.
So I guess before we go on a tangent of some sort, we should end the show, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
we shouldn't. Shouldn't, but you know, we should, I guess.
Probably. I mean, I don't think anyone listens to us for 2 hours, unless they do. I'm sure somebody really does want to listen to us for 2 hours. So I guess that's it for the show, right? Unless there's something else that I missed. No, nothing.
Wait. How many weeks back were we doing this? Like, just the.
It's just Core and New Guardians, right? Two issues.
Let me just make sure there's not something that, like, featured them or something. No.
Let me just make sure there's nothing that featured them that I can read right now and
talk about. We should probably mention that it's official that Blue Beetle and New Guardians will be crossing over in 2 months.
Right. Oh, yeah. If you guys aren't reading Blue Beetle, you got to start because apparently we're crossing over. But
it would make sense at some point the Reach would show up in the Green Lantern verse since they do have a kind of history.
You mean it would make some sense that Tony Bedard's two books would cross over?
I think it's a great idea, really, I do. I think the idea of establishing an interesting new race, the Reach, and that have actually started to show up on cartoons and are sort of getting known, and then using them against Green Lantern, it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea. Problematically, they're not fighting the Green Lanterns, fighting the New Guardians, which is the bunch of Power Rangers. And second, if you're actually reading Blue Beetle, what happened was startlingly awkward. Because, like, the Reach are in space for, like, the first like 6 issues, and they're just like looking at like Jaime Reyes and like, we're going to go down there and fight him soon. And you're thinking the whole storyline's gonna, the first storyline's gonna end with a big knockdown drag out with one of the Reach, and you're like, oh, it's really going there, it's really going there. And they spend like issue after issue being like, we're really, eventually we're gonna get down there. Once we're done with our salsa chips, you know, we're gonna get down there. And,
well, they did the same thing on Dragon Ball Z, not to be geeky, with King Cold and Frieza. They were just sitting in space for a while.
Which
I can't wait to get to Earth.
Well, to be fair, that was only like half a chapter or a fourth of a chapter in the comic.
Yeah, that's called filler. Anyways, no. So yeah, so there's either way, there's no excuse for the Reach doing that.
No, I don't care about the Reach sitting there doing that. And you can make all the excuses you guys want. I don't know if you've. That's fine. I mean, if you believe that that's why all anime has filler, because they're all catching up to the manga and whatever.
That's just because Toei's lazy, but whatever.
Keep dreams alive.
They want money.
But the fact of the matter is, I don't mind that the Reach were sitting there. It was a nice build-up, because, you know, you're getting the sense that Jaime was so strong, and like, oh my god, he's so tough. And if a guy really knew what he was doing, he'd be able to wreck everybody. And then, for no reason, at the bottom of one of the pages, one of them gets a phone call. He's like, picks up his cell phone, and they're like, oh, we gotta go to the Green Lantern title. What? We gotta go to the Green Lantern title? Yeah, we're gonna do a crossover with them instead. Okay. And they just fly away, and then the blurb says, to be continued in 6 months. Like, it says, to be continued to Green Lantern, like, number 9, and it was issue number 4. Which means, like, they're saying, oh, in 5 months, read a different title to find out what you've been doing, what these characters have been sitting there for an hour and a half. Like, it's essentially like, that if King Cold and Frieza are sitting there being like, we're really going to punch Goku right in the face. And then he gets a phone call and he's like, oh, in 6 years, go watch Vampire Hunter D to see what we do. Like, it's that stupid. Like,
that would be completely random.
And it's such an awkward pairing. I mean, it's like, it's a more logical pairing. It's kind of like saying, yeah, go watch Naruto and see what we do with these characters, because essentially it's the same kind of show, right? But like, you know, It is kind of like, why? It's like, it was such an awkward like changeover to a crossover.
So now we should end the show. Colton, unfortunately, this didn't go on for 2 hours like our other show.
Thank God.
So I guess until next time, stay green.
Oh, it turns out Frank is having sex with girls right now.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Yeah. I was
as we're talking, he's saying he's having sex with a woman.
Yes, he definitely texted as he
this
was
video. Check this it out video. On the greenlanterncore.com.
Sounds like something Andrew would approve of.
It does sound like something Andrew would approve.
Every week it's gonna be like, oh, I swear, Frankie's having sex instead, like, you know, I can have with a real woman, not like, you know, a woman that no one's ever heard of in a bar somewhere. Like, I could be having sex with a beautiful woman
didn't you just...
who gave me a beautiful son. But instead I'm talking about Green Lantern with you schmoes for 2 hours.
So, stay green.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncore.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncore.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCore.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time, and please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/Roy Clark Method.
This magic green, it is the color green, it can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me, it says, how, what it means.